Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and His Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 06-7161. Fatty Kasim, appellant versus Washington Hospital Center. Mr. Shaughnessy for the appellant, Mr. Harrison for the appellee.
Morning.
Your Honors. May it please the court, I'm Brian Shaughnessy, representing appellant Fatty Kasim. As your honors know, Mr. Kasim worked for the Washington Hospital Center as a nuclear technologist. Worked until August of 2003 when he was discharged over an incident that occurred. Mr. Kasim had made various complaints about conditions at Washington Hospital Center, including mistreatment of the nuclear material, failure of people to properly discharge their duties, many things that I have alleged in the complaint that reflect very badly on the Washington Hospital Center. In July of 2003, there was an incident in which someone received an injection of nuclear material in order to perform a test on himself. There was an investigation, and the Washington Hospital Center fabricated material, failed to investigate, and did a number of things that I have outlined previously. But the upshot of it was that they found that Fatty Kasim was liable, that he had administered the nuclear material improperly, and they fired him. During the course of that investigation, they threatened him with various things that would happen to him, including, I think significantly, that he would not work in this city again. At any rate, Mr. Kasim did not comply with their threats and continued to press for a good investigation. Washington Hospital Center concluded the investigation and fired him. The investigation ended, I think, on August 3rd, and they fired Mr. Kasim on August 15th. The problem unique to Mr. Kasim, because appellee and the court have relied on the inclusion of a remedy within 42 U.S.C. 5851, a remedy for this sort of a thing. And it requires that it permits an employee who's been terminated in retaliation for this sort of behavior to bring an action within the NRC with an administrative action within 180 days.
Do you agree that it's an adequate remedy if he has access to it?
Excuse me?
Do you agree it is an adequate remedy if he has access to it?
It appears to be. I have only seen
one. So your argument is he could not have access to it?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
Did you make that argument below?
Pardon?
Did you make that argument below? The defendant represents that you,
yes,
that you did not.
No, I did not make it as such below. But the argument was there, and it was not until that was brought up. The way the thing came up was that it was brought up in the reply to my opposition by the defendant. The defendant brought it up for the first time then. I attempted to, and I was invited by the court, to file a surrebuttal. I filed a surrebuttal which went to the substance, but it was stricken.
Did the surrebuttal go to the lack of ability, access to the remedy?
Well, what I'm saying is I went to the adequacy of the remedy, but the surrebuttal was stricken. The court said that.
Did you go to the impossibility?
Excuse me?
Not the adequacy of the remedy, but the impossibility of access by your client to that remedy. Did the surrebuttal address that?
Well, the cerebellum as filed did not.
Yes. All right.
But what I was trying to explain is that I had a substantive cerebellum that went to many of the things in this, and I believe including the adequacy of, excuse me, the accessibility of the remedy. However, that cerebellum was stricken. It was stricken because the cerebellum was invited only on a specific question. The question was whether or not there was whether or not there would be other damages to Mr. Casa, and the court did not want a full surrebuttal. Right,
but can I just go back? Did the surrebuttal that you filed, which was later stricken, did it actually address the question? Did it say that he wasn't in the country, so he didn't have access?
No, it did not.
It didn't make that kind of argument.
Well, I wanted to make it, and I tried to make it, but it was stricken.
In the thing that was stricken?
Yes.
The thing that you tried to make, did that say he did not have access to this because he was out of the country?
I believe it did. I will look for it try to. I believe I have it with me. But it, since it was not part of the record, I did not. It didn't focus on it. But
right. And did
but
you move? Did you move to reconsider afterwards?
No. No, I had been sufficiently chastised by exceeding the bound of the requested surrebuttal that I felt that this was it. But at any rate, Mr. Kasem did not have sufficient access. He was as Your Honors know, an Australian, and he was deported or left the country under threat of deportation, I believe on August 25th or 28th.
But that would be an odd rule, wouldn't it?
What's
that someone who has a claim in this country because they are out of the country does not have access to our courts?
Well, I suppose it's an odd argument in the sense that that obviously anybody has access to U.S. courts for matters over which the court has jurisdiction. I certainly don't dispute that. What I'm saying is that he was forced out of the country within 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks of his being fired. He was an Australian. He had to go. He had no job. And even more importantly, particularly for the emotional distress argument, the NRC is and nuclear technology is a carefully controlled profession. You must have good standing with the NRC in order to participate. Because he had been fired for this reason, he no longer had the ability to do what he normally did, that is, be a nuclear technologist in the United States. And he was not able to get a job. Well, he had economic difficulties, but I know that is not really the important thing here. But he was practically deprived of the opportunity. He was out of the country. He was in an emergency situation. He had no job. And I suppose there is some way that he could have divined the running of the 180 days with the administrative remedy. But in fact, he did not, and it was understandable because of the situation he was under. I realize this is a difficult
Did he know
position.
Of it?
Pardon?
Did he know of it?
I don't know. I did not meet him until sometime later.
No, I mean, does the record indicate one way or the other?
Excuse me?
Does the record indicate one way or another whether he knew of the remedy?
No, I don't think so. He just left because he did not have, he came back to the United States in 2003, and that's when he straightened out his problems. Now, I realize, as I said, this is a difficult area here, because if you write something that there is an exception, it is going to undercut the administrative remedy. However, with respect to Mr. Kasem, I believe that this is the appropriate thing to do. There is a, unfortunately, in the dissent, a treatment of a somewhat similar civil rights action in the recent Ledbetter case in the Supreme Court. I hesitate to rely on a dissent, but Judge Ginsburg wrote a dissent taking the position that the complainant should have had more of the 180, more than the 180 days to bring.
Right, but this isn't, he didn't actually, this is, the problem here wasn't that he didn't file within 180 days. He didn't file within how long? Or did he not file at all?
No, he didn't file at all.
So unlike Ledbetter, where the question was, do we excuse a late filing? You're asking to excuse no filing at all, mm-hmm. right? Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, I'm asking for this court to permit the case to go forward. If I may, I'd like to speak to the emotional distress count, which I believe clearly should be reversed. The dismissal should be reversed. The case primarily relied on by the defendant and the court is Kerrigan. Kerrigan is a well-established case, and it applies to a situation in which a retail store made up some things about the employee, demoted him, and caused him to be constructively discharged. He left shortly after that. It purports to put in a higher standard for a an employment relationship when evaluating an emotional distress account. This case, I believe, is well beyond Kerrigan. First, within the employment relationship, it is beyond Kerrigan, even if one limits it to that. These people at the Washington Hospital Center were highly motivated. This was one of their primary sources of money. They had been mishandling nuclear devices, as I pointed out in, I believe, one of in the complaint. There was sufficient untended nuclear material to make a medium-sized dirty bomb. This was something that was available to anyone who had any awareness of what went on at Washington Hospital Center. In addition, there were other things that were that I categorized that were disqualifying factors for Washington Hospital Center to retain its nuclear license. This was something very important. Therefore, they went after him. The things they did to him, besides the normal lies and, you know, which one expects when one reviews Kerrigan, they made an attack on his occupation. With Kerrigan could go out and work at another store and sell pants the way he had been with breeches. Here, everything is controlled by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and they attacked his fitness to hold a license. They attacked
it. They did an investigation, which I know you attack, but on the basis of that investigation, then, as I understand it from the record, when they were asked by potential employers for a recommendation.
Well, that's later.
That's later.
Yes.
But he asked for an investigation, and the hospital did it. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yes, he asked for an investigation of the hospital. The investigation that was conducted was of him.
Yes.
They had charges brought against him in a Nuclear Regulatory Commission that were only dismissed in 2003 when he was able to come back. That goes to part of my second argument, but that
is. No, but what I'm trying to understand is you say here there was an attack on his reputation. But I thought the point of the D.C. Court of Appeals cases was that, you know, some outrageous things can happen to employees in the context of an employment relationship. And here the hospital claimed your client had done, you know, an outrageous act, and they proceeded on that basis. And
well,
what would we have to find? Would we have to determine that the hospital's basis for its conclusion was wholly without merit, or that it proceeded with an evil motive?
Pardon?
Or proceeded with an evil motive?
The charges were found to be false. He was exonerated by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in 2003, so that we don't really have to find that. He alleges it, which is sufficient, I think, when taking it the allegations in the light most favorable to the plaintiff. But in fact, that's what happened.
But there was an internal investigation in Kerrigan also. Mm-hmm. That
Excuse me?
There was an internal investigation by Bridges in Kerrigan also, which was alleged to be false and trumped up, and that didn't matter to the Court of Appeals.
No, it didn't. But what I am saying is that in Kerrigan's situation, the internal investigation only resulted in his firing, albeit without basis. But Kerrigan could then go and do other things. He was a clerk at or a manager at Bridges, which is a used to be a
I know, I used to buy my pants, sir.
You bought them. Well, you missed out on Kerrigan. But he could get another job. This was different. This was a different kind as opposed to simply a degree. Here, they attacked his ability to practice his profession that he had gone to school for, had a master's degree in. They attacked it in such a way that he could not practice it until he cleared up the nuclear regulatory matter. There is a bar on anybody who is not passed by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission from practicing as a nuclear technologist. And so that was not like Kerrigan being fired. However, there are many things in there that I believe were outrageous. I mean, they threw him out of the country and so on. But this case is beyond Kerrigan, not only because of what happened within the context of the employment, but as I think it is Wade says, you should look at the whole context. Here, this went beyond the discharge. If they had simply fired Kasem on August 25th, 2003, and said, well, you're out of a job, we don't like you anymore, we fabricated it, but so what? We're protected by Kerrigan, go and be well. That would have been the Kerrigan case. Here, they persisted, and indeed, they have, I hesitate to bring this up because I did this once before with Your Honor, Judge Rogers, but I believe that there is an error in the statement of facts in Pelley's brief. They still say that he acted like his own cowboy doctor, and they said that he injected the material into the fellow that was in question after the exoneration of Mr. Kasem by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. They still use it.
All right, why don't you save the rest of your time for rebuttal? All
right. I shall do that.
Let's hear from Appellate.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning.
May it please the court. My name is Keith Harrison. I represent the Washington Hospital Center. The allegations in Mr. Kasem's complaint are false and outrageous. I believe
we have to operate on the assumption that they're true and not outrageous.
Understood.
So
understood.
That's the only question for us.
And here, as Judge Robertson found, even if every allegation, every single fact alleged in the complaint were true, the complaint was still properly dismissed pursuant to Rule 12b-6.
Okay, let me ask about one aspect of that, which is really where your opposing counsel ended. If it is true that they falsely filed charges against him with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, why isn't that sufficient to state a claim for intentional infliction of emotional distress? I understand that the argument about him being fired, about the internal investigation, about any of the normal internal consequences of wrongful discharge, but the filing of a, assuming it's correct, of a false and serious charge, which would have, you know, possibly eliminated his ability to work. The D.C. Court of Appeals has held that the filing of false charges in an investigation, that's Carter versus Hahn, is sufficient to state a claim for intentional infliction of emotional distress. Why shouldn't that aspect of the case be reinstated?
This is a case in which the allegation is that the investigation was a sham, essentially.
I'm not talking about the internal investigation. I understand there's a whole bunch of other arguments, and I want to put those to the side just for the moment. I want you to focus only on the claim that there was a false charge filed with the NRC, just like if there were a false and knowingly false charge. Again, we have to accept that for the moment. If somebody makes a false, knowingly false charge to the Metropolitan Police Department, that can be sufficiently outrageous to have an intentional infliction of emotional distress. In that case, it was about, in Carter, it was a passing a false check. And that was sufficient to state a claim. This seems even worse, obviously. The claim that somebody injected nuclear material into somebody else seems a little bit worse than passing a check.
Well, with regard to the Carter case, that case was not within the context of any employment arena.
That's right.
And that is a critical distinction in Kerrigan. In Kerrigan, the court said if you are within the context of an employment relationship, then those actions are not going to be found to be outrageous.
The ones inside the employment relationship or not, but this is outside. This is filing a charge in a with an administrative agency. They didn't have to do that, or I don't know whether they had to do that, but that's not part of the wrongful discharge claim. Other states applying their own common law intentional infliction of emotional distress have, for example, I have an Ohio case, Russ versus TRW, have permitted that element of the intentional infliction tort to continue. The wrongful discharge, no, but the false investigation afterwards by an agency, yes. Why do we think that the District of Columbia wouldn't follow that rule?
In this context, under the allegations, under the facts as alleged in the complaint, the alleged false report still fell within and was prior to the discharge. The investigation took place. There was an internal investigation, and thereafter there was a report, and thereafter a report to the NRC, and thereafter there was a discharge, as alleged in the complaint. The Washington Hospital Center was required to report this incident as a matter of law. In fact, they self-reported it. And so it was a legal requirement for them to do so. And it was a legal requirement that is part of the employment context. That is, it arose out of the employment relationship.
There are two different issues here. The required part seems to me would justify a privilege, usually a qualified privilege for reporting to authorities. But you don't get that at this stage, usually. That is at the 12B6. Say more about why it's tied up as part of the employment relationship.
Well, it's the plaintiff in this case, Mr. Kasim, was in a highly regulated industry, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission closely monitors, as counsel has indicated, closely monitors every aspect of the employment relationship as it pertains to the handling of nuclear materials. And as a result of that, when an employee does something wrong, or is even alleged to have done something wrong, a report has to be made. So the alleged false report actually sprung out of and was a product of the employment relationship.
Would the same thing be true if you fired your accountant for stealing from the company and trumped up, assume for the moment, and call the police also?
Well, that's a little further removed, and I'm not sure that would be the case, because you don't have to. You can fire your accountant. You don't have to report it to the police, and you can go about your business.
Would that be?
Wouldn't
it be misprision of a felony not to report?
I don't believe so.
How confident are you of that?
Well, even if it were.
It's not the same. You're saying it's not a regulatory environment.
It's not a requirement. I don't believe it's a requirement. It's a legal requirement. With regard to the Washington Hospital Center, had the Washington Hospital Center not made a report, then it would have violated the...
In other words, is your argument that as a nuclear scientist, in taking the job, a term of his employment, as it were, was that if the hospital found any reason to find fault with his handling of nuclear materials, he knew, as a condition of his employment, that a report would be filed with the NRC?
Absolutely. It's a clear term and condition of his employment. It's part of the employment relationship when you work in a highly regulated industry. And there's no more highly regulated industry, I would suggest, than the nuclear industry in this country, especially post 9/11. So in this context, you can't remove the investigative report, the report of the Washington Hospital Center's internal investigation from the employment context. They're one and the same. Without one, you can't have the other. It is, for example, if the Carrington case, the facts are almost exactly the same. There was internal investigation. It was alleged to be a sham. There were supposed leaks to other individuals that hurt his reputation. If there had been a requirement of that employment relationship in Kerrigan so that they had to make another report that was alleged
was that
to...
That was a sexual harassment?
That was sexual harassment.
So, just so I'm clear, we could rule in your favor on this and yet leave open the possibility that if in the Kerrigan case they had filed a complaint with the EEOC or something like that, that that would be different. Because
yes.
Reporting sexual harassment in the employment context is not required by some regulation the way that reporting misuse of nuclear material is?
Yes. That there is a distinction. That is, with regard to the intentional infliction of emotional distress.
That's
claim,
all I'm talking about. Right?
A distinction between Kerrigan and this case, because the employment context is different, and the employment context is significant. And this is a perfect example of why of circumstances in which courts should defer to statutory schemes.
Let me ask you one more question. I'm sorry to take up your time. Although I began by saying that we have to take the claims for the truth, there is this footnote in their brief, which opposing counsel mentioned again, that he had been exonerated later by the NRC. It's not really decisive or dispositive for the case, but I'm interested. I didn't see a response to that. Is it the case that the NRC found him not guilty and found the hospital guilty or something like that?
No, that is not the case. The hospital was fined, but that was because no matter what was found,
on their watch.
But it happened on their watch.
Was he exonerated?
He was not.
What did it say anything about him, one way or the other?
There are a lot of facts involved in that. In fact, the individual who was actually injected said that Mr. Kasim was the one who injected him.
Bottom line, the NRC, when they say he was exonerated by the NRC, is there some document from the NRC that actually ended up exonerating him?
No, there's no document that exonerated him.
However, did the commission allow him to practice his profession?
I believe, Your Honors, that the commission found that because there was some difficulty with regard to the investigation, with regard to actually finding and locating some key witnesses, that they did not have sufficient evidence to find that he had violated NRC regulations.
So the result of that is he is allowed to engage in his profession?
That I am not
All right.
sure of
All right.
and would not like to state on the record here.
All right.
Thank you.
But with regard to the intentional infliction of emotional distress claim, that's a claim that this court should certainly affirm the dismissal of, because it's a classic case of an employer making decisions within the context of a highly regulated but still the employment context. And that is the type of case that is properly dismissed. There are no facts at issue that would change the posture of the case or would change the application of law to the case.
All right. Do you want to speak at all to the wrongful termination claim?
I would, Your Honor. This case, as Judge Robertson indicated, is controlled by the Noetling decision. The Noetling decision is essentially the statutory scheme that the D.C. Court of Appeals addressed in Noetling is essentially identical to the statutory scheme here, because in both instances you had statutory provisions that not only created the wrong but also provided a specific administrative remedy for that wrong. The Adams exception, which Mr. Kassim would like to take advantage of, that was not the situation in Adams. There was no statutory remedy. And in fact, as the Court of Appeals noted, there was a wrong without a remedy. Here, there is a remedy, and is clearly a sufficient remedy. When I look at the Noetling decision, the wisdom of the Noetling decision is clear when you look at its application in this case, because you have a highly regulated statutory scheme, where the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has experts, has scientists who can conduct these investigations, who can make the proper assessments, and it is a better scenario than having a court do it. The Noetling decision is essentially a gap filler.
Can I hold on just for one second? Opposing counsel, although I'm not completely sure about what the attempted rebuttal said, said that he made the argument about not having access. Did he make that, as far as you know, in the filed rebuttal?
He did not. He did not in either the reply that was rejected by the court because it was not tailored to the court's issues, questions raised, nor in the reply that was accepted by the court did he ever raise a single argument about the inability to take advantage of the remedy. And as a result, this is the first time that that argument has been made for the first time on appeal. He had multiple opportunities to do so, and the first time he did it was in his opening brief in this case. With regard to the Adams exception, it's a gap filler. Where there's a gap in the statutory scheme, where there's a gap in the wrong in the law, where there's a wrong without a remedy, the Adams exception may be applied. But that's not this situation. There is no gap in the administrative statutory scheme. And other circuit courts have looked at a similar situation, at least one other circuit court. We didn't focus on this in our brief because we focused on D.C. law, which we believe is completely dispositive of both claims, both Noetling and Kerrigan. We believe and submit that Judge Robinson properly dismissed these claims. However, the Tenth Circuit in Masters versus Daniel International Corporation, which is 917 F2nd 455, it's a 1990 decision of the Tenth Circuit, looked at nearly identical circumstances with regard to the public policy exception and dealt with this precise statute, the Energy Reorganization Act, and a situation where a nuclear technician or nuclear scientist, I believe, had indicated that he had filed a state-based wrongful discharge claim. And the Tenth Circuit looked at that case and based on Kansas state law, which would not recognize an exception to the at-will employment under circumstances where there is an administrative remedy, ruled that that claim was properly dismissed by the trial court based on state law. And that is a completely analogous case, although from a different circuit based on different state law, as is before this court. And in all of these cases, in both of these cases, in Noetling, in Masters, and in this case, you have a statutory remedy which not only creates the wrong, but also creates a remedy for that wrong. And the fact that the plaintiff failed to take advantage of that is irrelevant to the legal analysis, and as a result, this case was properly dismissed based on the application of the controlling Noetling decision.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Anything further?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll hear from appellant.
With respect to the emotional distress count, as we have discussed, this is based on Kerrigan. Kerrigan was a case that was designed to take care of squabbles amongst employment situations. This goes far beyond it. Here, this is important, highly important to the Washington Hospital Center that they quash Mr. Kossom's position. It is said that the Washington Hospital Center was required to report this. Now, they did report it after he was discharged. They did not report it before he was discharged. It's very clear that it came afterwards. And it's also very clear that they persisted in this by persisting in pressing for his dismissal as a nuclear regulatory person. And with respect to the whether or not he was exonerated, they dismissed the case after a full hearing that they had. They satisfied themselves to the extent that they wished, and they found the evidence insufficient. It wasn't just that it was missing, it was insufficient, because this charge was filed early on, and it was supplemented later on. This was filed in the years 2003, and it was buttressed in 2004, and it wasn't until 2005 that Mr. Kossom had an opportunity to come and contest it. So that it isn't as if this were in just in the employment situation. Furthermore, there is no requirement that Washington Hospital Center actually report false things. They don't have to retain their license, but it was very important to them that they retain their license. And of course, nobody would reasonably expect Washington Hospital Center to simply abandon it, but they didn't have to lie. This is not a requirement. And the further material that came afterwards, that is the inability to get a job, he had to beat to the NRC matter. He is now employed in California as a nuclear technologist and has just been accepted into University of Missouri's PhD program, which is a very unusual and a very selective process. They have enormous numbers of applications, and they take only five a year. This is a very selective profession. A reputation is important, and Washington Hospital Center has persisted in attempting to destroy this man. They have not been successful, but they did bog him down in the regulation process and trying to get a job. He is now coming out of it with this program. This is far beyond Kerrigan. Kerrigan was designed simply to take care of minor employment matters. This is serious. They attacked him in the practice of his profession. That is across the board, all throughout the United States, which is where nuclear technology is very important. There's nothing of this nature in Australia or elsewhere. So that they have attempted to remove him from his profession. That, in addition to the normal lies and harassments that go with a false discharge. But this went beyond it in time, and it went beyond Kerrigan in intensity during the employment period. So in both respects, this case should be reversed, and at least the emotional distress count should be sustained. I will not argue the other because I've made my argument, but that California case simply says 180 days with nothing else. No luck. It's the only case I know of that cites this statute.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.